little bit of Texas just came into Connecticut. So a few weeks ago, I announced that my children would be attending public school again, and that the world is watching. My audience continues to grow, with the program being downloaded in 10 countries so far. So that's, first of all, thank you for listening. I appreciate all of you who are on this bizarre journey with me. And secondly, you're certainly all watching. You know, by listening, but you know, you're watching. I can't go into details yet due to the investigations taking place. But I will certainly be telling the whole story as soon as I can. And with a sentence like that, I'm sure you can tell that things have not gone well at all. In the aftermath of the first incident, I spent more time and energy than those involved deserved from me just trying to figure it all out. My maternal rage was so intense that one night I reached into the depths of my soul and I thought, you know, I'd like to put a hex on these people. I mean, come on, I'm a witch. I'm a Christian too, but whatever. Let's be C.S. Lewis about this and assume that my intentions are aligned with the higher good. When I say I'm a witch, I mostly just burn herbs, light candles, close my eyes, send some form of prayer energy out, and buy too many crystals because I collect rocks, you know, crystals, rocks, whatever. I have way too many rocks and crystals everywhere. It's like my whole house is just stone. And also, I say I'm a witch because it's 2023 and it still freaks people out. It's hysterical. And, you know, no one is really sure what I mean. Usually I get asked if I'm a Wiccan, and I'm not. I'm more of a pagan, I think. I observe the seasons, and I love nature. I stare at rocks, of course, and trees, and the sky, like some sort of coked-out hippie, you know, that kind of thing. Frankie once told me that I can't be a witch because I don't have green skin. I also still go to church, and I have daily Bible devotions as well. I'm just a highly spiritual person, and I'm attuned to the universe. I believe in spirits. Not ghosts, spirits. I believe those who have passed stay with us in some form or another. And I don't really believe in bad spirits. Maybe I've just never really experienced any messing with me. I don't know. I think there was one time, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, it's not a huge deal. I do a lot of prayer, meditation, and when I have the time, energy, and space for it, I do spiritual work as well. But when I'm angry, not like irritated, you know, angry. You know, because like I'm irritated at least 19 times an hour because of I have zero tolerance for any discomfort and I'm autistic, so I'm uncomfortable all the damn time. But I'm talking actual rage. The only thing that will tip me into that level of anger is someone hurting those I love most. Everyone knows I'm well past a mama bear, but more like a mama dragon on steroids. And you can judge me if you want. I don't care what you think. Go raise your own kids. What was all that business I said in the first episode about keeping this a positive place? Don't worry, it gets better. Point being, you mess with my kids, you don't get to see the Amy everyone else sees. The fire of my all-consuming rage will singe you, and whether or not you survive is not my problem. So, as I was trying to process the ungodly emotions of everything going on here in rural Connecticut, I was up late one night and thought back to something I don't discuss very often because, quite frankly, it makes me deeply uncomfortable. Back in the 1960s, my mother was working on her education degree in Texas. She was a newlywed to a man who was, as she discovered too late, brutally violent. This was not my father. This was her first husband. I don't know exactly how it came about, but knowing how abusive people operate, it wouldn't surprise me if it was his idea. They moved out to Pinon, Arizona, to teach on the Navajo and Hopi reservations. Yes, that means exactly what you think it does. My mother taught in U.S. government schools designed to take Native American children from their families and their culture to make them learn English and assimilate them to our ways. She took part in cultural genocide. It's so hard for me to say that because I loved my mother, and she did so many things in her life that weren't that. Plus the circumstances of why she was there and the incentives the government used to get people out there. But at the end of the day, I have to be able to say she was there without justification or excuse or explanation. I have to sit with that discomfort, feel it, and reflect on it. I can't change the past, but I can acknowledge the damage, the heinous atrocities, and the grief. If I can do more through action, I will. But for the purpose of this podcast, she was there. She talked about it and her experiences. I'm not sure she ever truly understood how wrong everything was, but she knew the children were terrified. And I know from what she told me, she did her best to comfort them at a time when she was terrified by the daily nightmare of her marriage. Those children were denied everything. Their dignity, their families, their language, their culture, their humanity. She told me about one of the Navajo children she taught who picked up English fairly quickly, and he would provide access to communication as a translator to the other children. He was a bridge for all of them to cross over the wall of fear they were stuck behind. This is one of the things about my mother that was so incredibly brilliant. She knew that to teach these children, they had to have access to their own language. It was the basis for everything they needed to understand and survive. The only thing they had left of their home life and to some feeling of safety. She understood the foundation of inclusion in mind-bending ways and even in such horrifying circumstances. She was brilliant. I thought about my children and my daughter being denied access to communication in her school. It reminded me of my mother's favorite story. She used to randomly say, "Ola witch!" Just walking down the stairs, cooking in the kitchen, it would pop out of her mouth now and then. "Ola witch!" It was a throwback to the Navajo child who learned to say witch from some Halloween decorations and became so excited that he would shout that to the other children to teach them the word. And now that I think about it, they were probably just making fun of my mother, which I suspect she has now learned as she is on her spirit journey. And I hope she is laughing as hard as I am at the very thought. But as I consider my own witchcraft and my maternal rage and these Navajo children subjected to such unspeakable indignities by my ancestors and my culture, I thought to myself, what if I go into a spiritual meditation, make a deal with the Navajo spirits, and hex the bejesus out of these public school people hurting my kids? Eye for an eye situation, right? Man, I really thought I had the right idea with this. So I went to look up Navajo curses. I was like, yeah, surely I can just Google Navajo curses. And they've got to have some, right? Just out there on Google, hanging out. Navajo curses, sure. First of all, I'm an ignorant white lady, and I have a lot of unlearning to do yet. My God, what the hell is wrong with me? Second of all, my Googling taught me that the Navajo are a peaceful people who believe in maintaining harmony. They don't do curses. It would be against nature. So I thought, well, this is no good to me. Let me go check out the Hopi culture. I went to go look up the Hopi, and thinking surely they had some badass hexing rituals I could bargain a few souls with. Nope. They're even nicer. I learned about the Hopi healing hand symbol, which resonated so much within me. They believe in the symbiotic relationship between people and the land, the responsibility they have to protect it, and how wishing harm on others would be against that honor they take seriously. I thought to myself, so what, I've just got to be a nice person? Are you serious? I mean, I've just been absolutely beyond furious. So none of this is what I was after. I wanted revenge. But the more I thought about it, it just kept resonating. And it just kept washing over me. The anger melted into the sorrow I'd been avoiding. I gave in to the intense grief I felt at my children being treated so unfairly, so cruelly, by the hand of another adult. I cried. I released the anger into water, letting it evaporate. So I had to feel the pain. Upon doing so, all the confusion I felt started to clear. And it was like I was playing a Tetris game on my 1990s Game Boy as the pieces from the whole situation started falling into place. Things that didn't add up were suddenly crystal clear. It was phenomenal. Like I'd been given the gift of knowledge. Instead of giving in to my need for revenge, I could now honor the sacred wisdom of the Navajo and the Hopi. A couple of days later, my husband decided to visit a Presbyterian church in California, where he's living and for work right now. I thought I'd watch the service on YouTube so we could share the experience despite being 3,000 miles apart. As I listened to the sermon with my son, Frankie, my head jerked up when Pastor Ted Hamilton was telling a story about when he was a kid in the days before seatbelts. His mother would throw out her arm to protect him. He talked about the protection of a mother's hand. And the tears just started rolling down my face because my mother did the same thing. It was like a memory unlocked. And I looked at Frankie and I just kind of laughed as I was crying. And I said, Granny did the exact same thing. Yes, we had seatbelts in the 1980s, but she was an older mother like me. And it was sheer habit she developed. I had her elbow level with my gut whenever she slammed on the brakes, which was more times than I can count. She was a terrible driver. It felt like a sign, hearing that sermon. This unplanned streaming of a church service 3,000 miles away, talking about this very thing my mother had done, and which I was metaphorically doing as well. Protecting my children by hitting the brakes, thrusting my hand out, not letting anyone near them. Pastor Ted also preached in the same sermon about how he and the church can't know what anyone's calling is, but they can sit with you while you're figuring it out. And again, the tears just streamed down my face because, and I haven't spoken to many people about this, but I had a spiritual experience back in March of this year that I felt was a call. And I haven't known how to answer it, or if I should. I spoke to a few people about it, and I think I'm still figuring it out. But I think the work I'm doing now fits into what I'm meant to do. So I didn't put any hexes on anyone. Instead, I focused on healing. Sometimes that means focusing on my own healing, and sometimes it means healing a broken system. As rightfully angry as I am at times, I go back to that moment when I first learned of the healing hand and all that validating symbolism that came after it. I'm going to close now with reading a short vignette I wrote 9 years ago when I lived on Hilton Head Island. I had a 9-to-5 job at that point, believe it or not. It's entitled Hand of God. Saturdays were different. The work week was survived in a haze of stress and fatigue, while on Sunday, I waited anxiously for it to begin again. On Saturdays, I let the earth heal me. After waking at a luxurious hour, I'd sit and look out the window with a cup of tea. Cats curled into my lap, purring our mutual content. Tall pines swayed in the breeze coming off the ocean. The sky was the purest blue found anywhere, and the gentle sounds of the island settled into me, calming, lulling, reminding me of why I was there. Instead of makeup, I wore the sun on my face. Jumping onto our bicycles, we raced the island wind to reach the beach. Dropping our bikes into the sand, we walked down to the water, hands clasped, keeping each other afloat as the ocean consumed us. Wading out into the murky depths, we capsized our bodies until we bobbed in the water as though cupped in the hand of God. The warmth of the salty water held us safe from any dangers lurking below. Voices from others on shore drifted away on the wind. All we heard was water slapping against our legs and our happiness. Lifting our wet faces to the sun, we were coated in a protective layer of brine, nibbled on by unseen lips. In those moments, joined together with each other and the womb of the earth, tiny grains of sand stripped us of our worries. Just the two of us, no longer against the world, but with it, a part of it, nurtured by it. Eventually, we emerged and returned to the sounds of children playing, couples laughing, retirees speculating. We washed off the sand, put our clothes on, and slipped back into the week. I'm Amy Crewalt, and I'm smiling. You just can't see it.